Patriots at 8-1 have the best record in the AFC. They are preparing to face Carson Wentz and the Philadelphia Eagles. But are they your best team in the NFL, Nick?
No, they are not. You will see it shortly. This is not a standings. It is a power rankings. These are the 8 best teams in football. One might ask, why do I do 8? Why don't I do 10? Why don't I do 5? 32-team league. 8 is 1/4 of that. So the top quarter of the NFL. We will start with the 7-3 Minnesota Vikings. The Minnesota Vikings have wins over the Raiders, the Eagles, and the Cowboys. Since Kirk Cousins had a near mutiny on his hands, he has been statistically one of the very best quarterbacks in football, but most importantly, that man right there. Christian McCaffrey's gotten the headlines, understandably, but Dalvin Cook has an argument that he has been the best running back in the NFL. The Vikings, to me, are number 8, Brian Westbrook.
I could make an argument that they should be a lot higher. Listen, anytime that you can run the football and stop the run in November and December, that's going to bode well for you. You add to that 2 very good receivers when you add Thielen back, and Kirk Cousins now has showed that he can win in primetime games. This team certainly should be a little bit higher than
Well, so then you're not going to like this because I think there's only 7 teams that can actually win the Super Bowl, and we will start with number 7, the Kansas City Chiefs. They have the worst record of anyone on this list. They also have some of the best wins of anyone's on this list. They have beaten the Ravens. They have beaten the Vikings with a backup quarterback. They've also beaten the all of a sudden relevant Oakland Raiders. We saw that Patrick Mahomes is going to be no worse for the wear after the knee injury. The problem for Kansas City is this. While their upside is still as high as any team in the league, their downside is lower than the downside of most of the teams on this list, as we saw in the waning moments against Tennessee. But Kansas City absolutely can still win the Super Bowl. I got them at number 7.
You know, I love Kansas City. I love Andy Reid. 2 problems with them. They can't run the ball efficiently, and they can't stay committed to the run, and they can't stop the run on the defensive side of the ball. That defense is a big-time question mark. Patrick Mahomes was great last week. They still lost because that defense couldn't get a stop.
I'm still at a loss that the Chiefs aren't number 1, just for whatever reason I sit next to every single day. Number 6.
Number 6, you're going to be at a loss again. The New England Patriots. The Patriots are 8-1. You might say they should be higher. I would say why. Like, just make the argument that doesn't have to do with what their record is. They have this season 1 quality win. It is over the Buffalo Bills. Tom Brady has been, right now, statistically an average quarterback across the board, but that defense is statistically, historically great. Now, they're about to face much tougher tests. The reason they are as high as they are, despite the question about the offense, is because they have the greatest coach ever. That defense, I think, will travel everywhere. And Brady, I do think, is holding something a little in reserve for the postseason. I think some of the plays where he's throwing it away and going down in the playoffs, he'll take that hit and deliver that pass. But right now, I've got them number 6.
Big time question mark about the Patriots. How do they come back, and how will they play this week facing the Eagles? How do they respond after getting beat up by Lamar Jackson and that Baltimore team? Can that offense get better? And who's going to be the guy that they're going to throw the ball to in critical situations? Gronk's no longer there.
Number 5 is the team with the other best record in the NFL, the San Francisco 49ers. They're also 8-1. Their schedule's been soft up to this point. Their best win is against the Kyle Allen-led Carolina Panthers. We know how great that pass rush is. Last week notwithstanding, we know how excellent the running game is. The questions are about that man you're seeing right there. Only 4 quarterbacks in football have more turnovers this year. Jameis, Jared Goff, Baker Mayfield, and Daniel Fumbles. Those are the 4 guys. So can you be one of the very best teams in the league with your quarterback on that list? In order to be, you have to be great everywhere else. They are great everywhere else. That's why I've got them at number 5.
They run the football. They stop the run. Big time question mark at the quarterback position. In critical situations, your quarterback has to play well. Jimmy G is a question mark.
In what lifetime were the Niners ahead of the Patriots on a list that you got this year? Number 4.
Number 4, the team that just beat San Francisco. It probably should have been a tie. San Francisco butchered that. It's the Seattle Seahawks. They've got the league MVP up to this point. They never have a down season. They now, most importantly, Brian, are really alive to win that division, host a playoff game. Hell, they're alive for a bye at this point, something that seemed impossible just 96 hours ago. Seattle's number 4.
Good defense, and the quarterback is playing out of his mind, MVP level. If you had that guy, old reliable Russ, that's the guy that can win you any game.
And the go ahead. Jenna. The teams that have been the three best teams in football this season, number three, the Baltimore Ravens. They have two exceptional wins over Seattle and over the Patriots. Lamar is playing out of his mind. The defense rounding into form. Number one offense in the NFL in points, number two in yards, but the defense, with the addition of Marcus Peters, with Earl Thomas getting fully indoctrinated in the defense, with Jimmy Smith coming back, that defense looking a lot more like the old Ravens defense. This is a dangerous, dangerous football team.
Scoring, attacking, active defense always wins in the playoffs. You got a dangerous quarterback as well.
You're going to start to see a theme, 1, 2, 3, and 4 with these teams, the best player on each of them. Who's number two?
Number two. The New Orleans Saints, Drew Brees. Drew Brees hasn't had to be the best player thus far this year. He will be later in the year. They have an excellent win over the Seahawks early in the season. They beat the Texans in that thrilling Week 1 game. They beat the Cowboys. They survived without Drew Brees. They have the opportunity to have the playoffs go through the Superdome. We know how valuable that is. For a lot of people, they would be number one, and I wouldn't parse it too much. To me, they've been the second best team in football this year.
Three questions about the Saints. Can they have a consistent run game? How good is that defense? And can they get a deep threat? Do they have the ability to throw the ball deep? Can Drew Brees get the ball down the field?
Your pick before the season started, I assume, is your pick today as we sit here right now.
Well, certainly my pick out of the NFC. My pick before the season started was the Chiefs. But I had them, and I still have them, by the way, take integrity, playing in the Super Bowl. The 8-2 Green Bay Packers. Now, the Packers' statistical profile is of a good, not great team, but their win profile is so far and away better than every other team in football. They have beaten the Vikings, the Cowboys, the Raiders, the Chiefs, and the Carolina Panthers. That is 5 wins against teams with winning records, and beaten the Bears, who are a live team, the Lions, who are a live team. Their easiest win was against the Broncos. And even though their stats aren't dominant, we know that Aaron Rodgers can be dominant. They also have a chance to have a bye for the first time in 5 years. This, to me, has been the most impressive team in the NFL.
Aaron Rodgers has trusted the process. He's trusted Matt LaFleur to say, listen, we're going to run the football a little bit. We're going to get our backs involved. Aaron Rodgers doesn't have to be the focal point all the time. The Packers deserve to be.
Remember when the Packers' biggest issue was going to be the relationship between the two of them? That is just a nothing
distant memory.
Flip now. All right, on to the NFC East now. 7 weeks left in the regular season. We know the division will come down to a 2-team race. Eagles and Cowboys both sitting at 5-4. But with Dallas coming off a loss and the Eagles stringing 2 wins together, Jerry Jones knows, quote, Philadelphia is coming. Chris Caney, who will win the NFC East? You think the Cowboys or the Eagles?
I'm still leaning toward the Cowboys just because the Cowboys have had so much success in the Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott era against the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, you look at their last 10 matchups, it's been one-sided affair. And the Dallas Cowboys, this team, finds ways to be able to give the Philadelphia Eagles fits, and it starts with Ezekiel Elliott. I think everybody understands that he's the engine for that offense. But in that game on Sunday night, Jenna, Mike Zimmer and the Minnesota Vikings defense, they were intent on taking Zeke away from the Dallas Cowboys, and they did. And Dak Prescott couldn't go out there and beat him, although he played a magnificent game. It came down to Jason Garrett and his play calling, or lack thereof, in the final 2 minutes of the game for inexplicably handing the ball to Ezekiel Elliott twice, being down by 4 points. It just didn't make any sense. Those two runs had a negative 3 yards net. So I look at this situation when everybody knows that they're trying to take Zeke away. What can Dak Prescott and that Dallas Cowboys offense do? And so far, they haven't been able to answer that question in the affirmative, at least not to the level that you would expect a championship contender. So for me, after last Sunday's game, I still had the same questions about the Dallas Cowboys going into the second half that I had coming into the season, which is, can Jason Garrett be the difference in a positive way when you're playing against quality competition? Can this team overcome adversity and injuries when you're not whole? Can you go out there and play at a high level against good competition? And then can Dak Prescott consistently play at a championship level? Those are still the three questions that have yet to be answered in a positive way for the Dallas Cowboys. We're hoping to see it at some point, but Jenna, up until this point in the season, they haven't shown us anything that would lead us to believe that those questions are going to be answered in a positive way.
But you're still leaning them slightly. Is that
I'm
correct?
Still leaning that way slightly just by default, because the Philadelphia Eagles have been so inconsistent this season as well.
Well, and to your point about Dallas dominating Philly in the Dak Zeke era, Zeke's never lost to Philly. 5-0 in his career in the 5 games. He's obviously missed a couple of them that they've played since he's come into the league. Here's the reason why I'm still with Philadelphia. Philadelphia. And I was with Philadelphia before the year. They were so disheartening early. You wanted to abandon them, but they were never able to lose contact with Dallas. I think Philly could lose to Dallas in Week 16 and still win this division. Mm. I don't think that any longer they have to get the split. I think that you look at Philly and you say, okay, in the final seven games, they have four games that, even as inconsistent as they've been, you'd be shocked if they lost. Those games are, of course, against Miami, two games against the Giants, and Washington. So if they're sitting at five wins, if they just have to not fall all over themselves to get to nine, then even if they lose to Dallas, they can win this division. Now, whoever wins this division is going to be a 9 or 10 win team that is going to be at home in the first round against an 11 or 12 win team that doesn't win the NFC West. One of those teams we saw last night is going to end up being an overqualified wild card team, probably a road favorite in the first round of the playoffs against one of these two teams. But Dallas, Philly is already through the gauntlet of their schedule. Dallas is just now beginning the gauntlet of their schedule, which is why them both being 5-4, even with Dallas right now having the head-to-head, to me that favors Philadelphia. And the other name you mentioned that I think is a huge, right now, a huge feather in Philly's cap, is the head coach of the Cowboys, Jason Garrett. And Doug Peterson might not be the top five coach he appeared to be after they won the Super Bowl, but I trust Doug Peterson in game management. I trust Doug Peterson as far as understanding how to put his team in tight spots at the end in a better position than I trust Jason Garrett. The Cowboys this year, 0-3 in one-score games. They had a close one against New Orleans, couldn't pull it off. They had a close one where they could have forced overtime against the Jets, and if they force overtime, they win that football game against the Jets, in my estimation. Mm-hmm. And they throw a pass to Jason Witten, and then 2 days ago, they have the game against Minnesota, which is there for the taking, and Dak said it after the game. I missed this yesterday, but I read the quote this morning. After the game, Dak said, yeah, I think, you know, we don't want to leave too much time on the clock there for for Minnesota. But you're worried. That is the ultimate definition of putting the cart before the horse. The score. Time, you got to score.
Exactly.
You
got to get it. And then worry about leaving.
And in fact, while you're trailing, you need to score as quickly as possible, because if you don't score, keep in mind, Dallas did get the ball back, but they only had 17 seconds. Mm-hmm. Had they not been as worried about grinding the clock, even if they fail on that second, third, and fourth down, maybe they have 45 seconds left. Maybe they have a minute left for Dak to try to pull off some heroics. So even though thus far this season, Dak has been better than Carson Wentz, and that was an advantage that I gave to Philadelphia going into the year. Holistically, as a total, I still believe in the Philadelphia Eagles more.
I think a lot of people would say at the beginning of the season that Carson Wentz would probably somehow edge out Dak Prescott at least a little bit, just from what we've seen the last couple years, take the head-to-head out of it. Mm-hmm. You look at both of these teams, they're both stacked at the skill positions. They both got tons of talent, and yet both teams have been so inconsistent this season. Does it come down to the quarterbacks and who you trust more down the stretch?
Well, here's the thing. I think Carson Wentz, from an ability standpoint, just has more than Dak Prescott. But the conversation is about the intangibles. Which quarterback is able to bring out the best in his guys most consistently? And I'd probably lean slightly toward Dak in that regard. Now, as far as Carson Wentz, the questions have been about his being able to stay healthy for his team and be available. But if these two guys are both healthy, then, yeah, I think it'll be a closely contested race, and it'll come down to that Week 16 matchup. But the Dallas Cowboys, to me, the biggest question is the head coach. And Nick talked about some of the sequencing with play calling. But, I mean, you had the first possession in that fourth quarter against the Vikings where you had the ball first and goal at the six-yard line. You got to settle for a field goal. Or even going back to the first possession that you had in the game where you get the ball in plus territory and you try to go for Brett Maher, 57-yard field goal that ends up being wide left by 18 feet. I mean, in that situation, you have to think, if you've got second and six, maybe this might be four down territory. But again, it goes back to the overall game management of Jason Garrett. And I think that's why we see some question marks regarding his future in Dallas and why Jerry Jones has not given him the contract extension. Jerry Jones is not sold on Jason Garrett continuing to be his head coach, because a good head coach finds ways for his team to be more competitive consistently, and a good head coach finds ways to put his team in position to win football games. And the Dallas Cowboys have not done that routinely throughout the course of this season.
To answer your question, question directly, Jenna. Thus far this season, Dak's been head and shoulders better than Carson Wentz. Yes. Like when you look at the numbers, if the Cowboys were just 6-3, let's say they had just won the Jets game, then Dak's name would be included in that second tier MVP conversation so far this year, because the numbers, he's top five in the league in nearly every relevant passing category. So I want to give him credit for that. The reason I can't trust Dallas, aside from the head coach, is because aside from the Philly win, their wins have come over four wins against three terrible teams. Two against the Giants, one against Miami, and the one that I'm leaving out that was against Washington. So if they are going to get to the nine wins they need, even if we give them the Philly win, okay, they also get Washington. Let's give them those two wins. Detroit has not been an awful team this year. We'll see if Stafford's back. They have New England. They have Buffalo. They have Chicago, who's a live team, assuming Trubisky doesn't kill them. And the Rams, who, while wildly underachieving, they have a winning record thus far this season. Like, the Cowboys are going to have to do in the second half something they were totally unable to do in the first half.
Right.
Beat some good football teams, and I don't know that I believe they can.
Here we go. Back here, first things first. We are joined now by Yahoo Sports senior writer Vincent Goodwill.
What up, man?
How you doing?
Good to see you, brother.
Good morning.
It's Daniel. This is Danny. Daniel's the first time on air. There you go.
You guys.
Pleasantries. I thought I was sitting next to a Spider-Man villain this morning.
Oh, wow. Oh,
I know.
You got the evil science.
Oh, yeah. Hey, listen, Danny's gear's always fresh.
I try to bring it.
He went no turtleneck today.
That's right.
I'm pretty sure he's paid to wear them.
I know.
It looks great. Good to see you guys.
All right, here we go, Vinny. Let's talk some Lakers and Warriors. No Anthony Davis for L.A. He was dealing with rib and shoulder injuries. No anybody other than D'Angelo Russell for Golden State. They'll be dealing with that all season. No surprise, the Lakers deal the Warriors a 120-94 beatdown. But the bigger story came before the game when Anthony Davis was asked about being the number one guy ahead of LeBron. Take a listen to what he had to say.
It was tough on me because I've done it in New Orleans, you know, but that's because, like, AD, you have to. You know, now it's like, all right, well, we're going to split this 50-50, you know, and when he came out, like, nah. This is yours. Like, I'll play the second guy. We going through you. And I was like, all right, well. And then there's the Lakers. So now AD comes to the Lakers, bigger spotlight, media is bigger, you know, does AD have what it takes? So I'm like, all right, man, I had to really like wrap my head around, okay, this is gonna be a fun year.
Vinny. You really buying LeBron as the number two, Anthony Davis? Okay, so I see, but I know that smile already. I've seen that a couple times this week.
look, that sounds nice. It's a generous gesture, right? But there's no way that if LeBron is as great as we believe that he is historically, and Nick, you believe he's the greatest player ever, I have him at worst in the top five. You can't look through history and say that there's a top five player historically that takes a back seat while in or near his prime. Kareem, Magic, Michael, LeBron, whoever you put in there, there's never been a person who will willingly take that spot back to number two. Now, you can do 1A, 1B like Shaq and Kobe did post their first championship season, but no, and I think here's why I think LeBron said that. Anthony Davis in that same interview said that. Derrick Rose was like a mentor to me. And Derrick Rose is 5 years removed from LeBron James being drafted. So imagine the esteem that he holds LeBron James in. So LeBron had to make sure that from a generational standpoint,
sure,
that he knew that Anthony Davis felt as invested and also as, you know, welcomed in that new environment with all the drama that happened the year before so that he could be his full self. And LeBron knows that he can't do this for 82 games every night and then 20 games and win a title. He's not at that point of his career anymore, but he's still going to have to be the guy that everything runs through if the Lakers are going to win anything of substance.
All right, so a couple notes here. One is, by the way, shout out to Shams Charania for getting, that was great stuff by him, and he does a great job in general. And I'm not going to parse with you the Kareem Magic thing because I feel like there was a brief period where they were both in their prime and someone had to take a back seat, but I get the point that the overall point that you're making. But this is why LeBron, in addition to top five's generous, into being the greatest player ever, he's the smartest player ever. Anthony Davis needed to hear this. Anthony Davis not under contract after this season. The Lakers got no play if he walks. Now, he is not going to walk. He is not planning on walking. But neither Anthony Davis nor Rich Paul have ever once said he's a lock to re-sign there. Now, I feel he's a lock to re-sign there because LeBron's going to massage and handle this situation perfectly. And Anthony Davis, by the way, will lead the Lakers in points this year. He will be the focal point scoring-wise of their offense. But and at one point, because LeBron plans on playing at least this season plus three more, hopes to be four or five more because he's holding on to the hope he could one day be on the same court as his son, even if it's on opposing teams, he knows what the timeline is. At some point, whether that's year 19 or 20 or 21, he won't be in his prime any longer. He's already extended his prime longer than any player other than Karl Malone in NBA history. But at some point, Anthony Davis will actually be the number one. But right now, he can be the number one in name. LeBron still has to run the team. LeBron James still has to run the offense. And LeBron James still has to run the behind-the-scenes aspects, which a lot of this was. It's the same thing with trying to give him his jersey number. It's these little things to make it clear, hey, man.
Psychological warfare, a little bit.
Warfare is not the word I would use. Psychological, whatever a positive version of warfare
sure,
is. Yeah, because
course.
Like the where he wants Anthony Davis to feel like, hey, man, you are not Robin. Because Anthony Davis is too good and too young compared to soon-to-be 35-year-old LeBron James to be Robin, even if when we're watching the games, we're like, that dude's Robin. He's an overqualified Robin. And so, yeah, I don't buy it, but I understand why he did it, and I think it was calculated, and I think it's the absolute right move.
Don't you think it's eerily familiar to what D-Wade told LeBron when they had the big three join and Dwayne Wade said, hey, I'm giving you the keys, man. This is your
after
franchise.
Run.
Yes, after, and that was when they started to take off. That's when they actually started to win. I think the impact that that had on LeBron and he saw what that meant for him personally is probably similar to why he did this with AD, saying, you know what? Because I don't think anybody's going to question who the alpha is in there, who the leader is, who the face of that franchise is, who's going to have their ball in their hands at the end of games. Now, the thing LeBron has always done, he's going to make the best decision, basketball decision, late game situations. So I think from that standpoint, nobody's buying, hey, all of a sudden Anthony Davis is going to be the focal point of this offense just by the nature of positions. But I think this was a significant gesture from LeBron to boost up Anthony Davis's confidence and belief in this team.
At some point, there's going to be, like you said, Nick, there's going to be the day where LeBron is not the greatest. He doesn't take up the most oxygen in the room. And how he adjusts to that is going to play on who plays with him, who plays next to him, and how his career sort of slides on a decline. He's on a decline now, but it's a very slow decline. It's not fast. It's not an Allen Iverson decline.
Right.
It's not a Carmelo Anthony decline where you notice it just being so obvious. So he's making sure that his career extends more and longer than anybody else's.
Nick, I don't understand. Where is Anthony Davis, besides scoring, the number one on this team?
Oh, that's the only place. It's the only place. And he might be, but he has to be able to have a leadership role empowered by LeBron, if for no other reason than age, then because there are so, Kuzma's going to be the third leading scorer on this team. I don't know if he's third most important, but he's going to be third leading scorer. Kuzma's going to be able to relate a lot more to Anthony Davis than he is to LeBron off the court. Lifestyle. Like there is the father of three married element of this, and Anthony Davis has to be empowered in all those ways. And I believe the Lakers are going to win the championship this year, and they can win the championship, and I believe will win the championship with LeBron being the best player on their team and in the league. But if they're going to win multiple championships, at some point, it's going to have to be because Anthony Davis is the best player on their team and in discussion for best player in the league. Because Giannis is only getting better. The Clippers, while I'm not as high on them as others, they at least have a three-year window of extreme relevance. I think the Rockets are scary. Luka is coming like a damn rocket ship. Like these are, and you're right, LeBron is slowly deteriorating. But I mean, if you were at the peak of Everest and you come down a little bit, you're still at the highest point in the world of anybody. So, like, that's where he is, but at some point, he goes down further. And that's when Anthony Davis has to meet him, you know, on his way to the summit. And he can't do that until two things have happened. One, LeBron has empowered him, and two, Anthony Davis has been on a real playoff run. That's the other element of this we have to wait and see, where how Anthony Davis, I think the best version of Anthony Davis we'll ever see will be the beginning of next season. Whether they win the title or not, once he has the real experience of those 15 to 25 playoff games, what it's like in that cauldron and what he becomes coming out.
Make no mistake, they can't win if Anthony Davis is playing a subservient role mm-hmm. to LeBron. They have to win because he feels like he is on an equal level, if not a higher plane from an all-around standpoint as LeBron. He's going to be the guy defending, blocking shots, setting the defense up. LeBron is not going to play that level of defense, and he's not going to be able to maintain a certain level of play for this entire season and also through the playoff run. Nick, I don't think that we can discount the amount of miles on his body so far and how much that's taken a toll on him to this
point. Same talk you and I had in the beginning. You could be my 1A, I'll be 1, and we'll move forward. Right on to the New England Patriots. They're using their bye week to stay out of the headlines, unless, of course, you consider a potential return of Rob Gronkowski newsworthy. Reports are that last season, when Gronk was cleaning out his locker, Robert Kraft came up to him, told him he wanted the tight end to return for November, December, and a playoff run this season. So, Coach, do the Patriots need Gronk to return for them to lock up their seventh Lombardi trophy?
Well, it's so interesting that somehow people brought what was said last year at the end of the season into this moment. Those things are said, and they're offhanded remarks. Would Gronk be a great addition to New England? Yeah, he'd be a great addition. But when you see him on TV and you see the things he's doing, it doesn't look like he's spending a ton of time in the weight room. It doesn't look anywhere near what he looked like when he was playing football. It's not that easy just to jump back on the field, especially if you're a guy who has a history of injuries, you haven't been training for football, and then suddenly everybody thinks that you're going to come in and be able to perform at a high level. It's not easy to do, and I'd be shocked if they even get close to talking about it.
And by the way, there's a drop dead date for this. Shortly, a few days after Thanksgiving is when, if he's not back on the roster by then, he's not able to come back this season for the playoffs. So this isn't something that in the middle of December he could decide, you know what, just for the playoffs. So we'd have a few weeks to know whether this is or isn't happening. I would be shocked if he comes back. Not only because what we see him doing with Fox, a couple months ago, the Maverick and LeBron show, the shop, was taped here in New York City. And I was at the taping and Gronk was there. Gronk seems so happy with what he's doing right now. So, and all of his public comments are, public and private comments it would appear, are that football was wearing on him. Now, that doesn't mean he won't.
Not just physically.
But no, that's what I mean, mentally. That yeah. The grind of it, that he needed a break from it. What are you laughing about, Coach?
Look, sometimes Gronk was in a great situation because Gronk just being able to be Gronk at some other team might not have been the best thing for his career.
Sure.
He goes to New England where things are set in stone and there's a way to do things. And that discipline, I think that helped him significantly. But it is hard. It is hard in New England.
And so there's the brutality of football, no matter who you play for, especially the way Gronk played, which was as bruising of a style as a tight end in the modern NFL can play, and a great blocker, and a guy who went over the middle and took hits. You saw the body armor he would have to wear at this point in his career. And the mental part of it, which you're talking about, which is day in, day out. Doesn't matter that on a per-game basis he might be the best tight end ever, that he's one of 53 in the meeting room. So I do not believe Rob Gronkowski's coming back this year. I do believe there's a reason all of a sudden the story came up, is because people are starting to realize something that I've been saying for the better part of 6 weeks. This Patriot offense is mediocre. This Patriot offense needs an injection of talent. It needs not only an injection of pass catching, but of blocking. Tom Brady needs someone that can give him a little extra time in the pocket, and that sometimes was Rob Gronkowski. It wasn't just that he was the guy they went to on the third and got a habits. It's that he was the guy who helped set the edge on their running plays. And so with no James Devlin, with the injuries on the offensive line, with the rotating cast of characters they've had at tight end, you know why they would want even a 75% Rob Gronkowski. I just don't think if Rob Gronkowski has any inclination to play football again this season. Now, I'm not saying he'll never come back, but this season it would be shocking to me.
Now, they have had an infusion of talent. They've picked up Mohamed Sanu. Yep. N'Keal Harry's going to be back here at some point. Ben Watson is starting to get more incorporated into the offensive system. It's just hard for a guy to come off the street and perform at a level that he's used to performing at, especially with his injury history, and especially in a system that's as demanding as New England's is, and add to the fact that you haven't been working out. You haven't been training like a football player, so it's hard to believe he could come back and make a meaningful contribution.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.